Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. A quorum is present. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for Monday, December 19th, 2022. Representative Igbaje moves approval of those minutes.
Yes, I do.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, we left our meeting on Monday with a statement that we would be considering options to address the challenges presented by the state office building as it is currently constructed and frankly neglected. Today we are going to hear presentations from people who have been employed by the Department of Administration and worked with members of the House as well as other tenants in this building, including the LCC, the Revisor, the Secretary of State, the Legislative Reference Library, and others. They will present a process that has been underway to assess the needs of the building and to then move on to a presentation of a plan that meets those needs as well as addresses a series of concerns about public access in addition to the immediate needs of this building. Finally, we will have a discussion about that presentation, that proposal, and there is a resolution in your packet that we can adopt if we so choose. So I will ask first Mr. Joe Stallman to present on the building design consultation process and programming. I would ask members to hold questions until the conclusion of Mr. Stallman's presentation. At that point in time, questions about the process or any issues related to the work of his company in this consultation process, and then we will move on to a presentation from Steve Berg, an architect at BWBR, about a proposed solution to the state office building challenge. So, without further ado, Mr. Stallman, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. My name is Joe Stallman. I am a vice president at MoCA. MoCA is the service division under the larger umbrella MoCA Systems, Inc. And we also have a software division, TouchPlan, which is a commutative construction software. MoCA is a full-service owner's representative project management firm. We have 9 offices across the country and one right here in downtown St. Paul. We have a specialization in capital complex projects. And I'm proud to lead that charge at the national level. I know some of you from my time here at the Minnesota State Capitol Restoration from the years 2012 through 2017. During that time, I also served in the same capacity for the construction, design and construction of the Senate building, as well as parking ramp F, and that is in the owner's project representative or owner's project management role. Since that time, my team and I have worked on projects very similar to this in the states of Wyoming, California, Missouri, and even the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. These are a unique building type with unique challenges, and they take a unique skill set. I'm proud to say that MoCA is an industry leader in this particular building type as it pertains to owner's project management, and I'm proud to lead that charge. I say that with confidence. However, that did not preclude us from needing to compete for this work. There was a public RFP process. That RFP was released about a year ago now, and we submitted our proposal for. We were notified of tentative selection over spring break of last year and negotiated that contract. We were under contract by the end of March of 2022 as owner's project manager. As for what an owner's project manager does as it pertains to design scoping and schematic design, MoCA has developed a system we call Early Project Definition and Alignment, EPDNA. I could speak at length about that. For most part, though, I will talk about the workshop process that is a contributor to that. The idea is that we recognize the importance of early decision making in a project and how that really leads to a successful project, how identifying the key goals long before pen hits paper is a key to a successful project and making sure that that is a collaborative process. that it is involves partisan and nonpartisan people, that it is a process that identifies very early what the end goals will be and ensuring a successful project. So as for our workshop process here for the Minnesota State Office Building, we did 9 total workshops. They're actually numbered 1 through 8 because we had a visioning session at the beginning, and I will go through each of those today. Those 9 total workshops, a typical workshop would be 3 full days of intense involvement with all tenant groups and really great discussions talking about different subject matters at each workshop. Those 3 days make for a long week. We take a week off and our team kind of recalibrates and talks about what we learned and what we might ask at the next one. So that spanned 4 months from June 1st through the end of September. And we had a lot of really great participation. We did them right here in this room. For the record, we are in room 10 of the State Office Building. And we would fill the dais with very interested tenant group members. And we would also, on our off times, would work with breakout meetings with each of the tenant groups. The idea is that we get thorough engagement and that we are reaching out to, as I said, partisan and nonpartisan people within the building, that we're talking to not only elected members, but the very important staff that really make the business happen within this building. Typically, we would reach out to department heads, and those heads would then help us determine which of their staff would be best fit for each of the subject matters and who should be in this room for each discussion. That includes the House. We would ask leadership to help us determine who we should be reaching out to. And we also had a House member session, so I will talk a little bit more about that on an upcoming slide, and of course, leadership check-ins. This slide is an example of who we initially reached out to on the left and how that list changed over time as the group got a better understanding of the goals and the rhythm of what a workshop process looks like. And so we would see new faces come and go throughout the process, partisan and nonpartisan. Here's a look at what this room looked like during the workshop. We would fill the dais, as I mentioned. This particular picture looks like it was a systems discussion because I see a lot of plant management people along the edge of the dais there. The following picture here, I can tell, is a discussion about what a committee room or a hearing room should function like. And this was a great forum to have that discussion in. We talked about how the dais should be shaped. We talked about where staff should be located, how you enter and exit a room, and all of the security and accessibility challenges that are currently existing in this building and that could be solved with a restoration. There was a 6-member panel that we met with twice throughout that process, and the names are listed here. Bipartisan, of course, and we also met with leadership throughout the process, sometimes together and sometimes separately. So I will start with what we call the visioning workshop. That would be the first of the 9. And the idea is to bring everyone to the table and identify what the values and principles, the main drivers of the project would be. It's trying to determine what is most important to the tenant groups. We ask that each person in the room start to think about those things and give us ideas of what those items that are most important are. We captured them on what we call snow cards. We posted them on the wall. We then started to reorganize them in like ideas so that we could take very defined ideas and put them in similar categories. We asked the group to go up and vote on these ideas with quite simply drafting dots so that we could understand after the discussion, now how do you feel about what's most important on this? And then we would prioritize those. The idea is that we would come up with a set of core values, hopefully more than one, less than a handful. And the result of which is these 4 core values that you see here. Now these would become are values that will be key in the discussions throughout the workshop process, but not only that, but throughout design. And given the opportunity to continue this, we will continue to champion these four core values through future phases of design as well. You will notice that the first two are inherently in conflict with each other, and that gives us a challenge on the design. This building needs to be secure and safe, but it also needs to be open and accessible, and that is no easy task. Our design team understands the need, the equal need for both of those things to be met. We also have two more core values, the functional aspect of this building and how each tenant operates within this structure, not only the house, but the other tenants as well. And then character was determined. And when I use the word character, I want to take a little time to say that's not necessarily meaning that it's Art Deco or some style of architecture. The character that we are referencing here is that that reflects the importance of the work that is being conducted within this building. That you understand when you enter this building that this is the public's business that is happening here. This is the people's place, and that that the people who work here are serving the public. So with that under our belt, we started the next eight workshops, which are numbered 1 through 8, and 8 being a summary and a program review. Workshop 1 was a little bit of housekeeping. We talked about the importance of building information modeling, which we call BIM. In real terms, it's a computer model of what the building is, and we wanted to make sure that we start on the right foot with plant management, with admin, with our tenant groups to see what they want to see out of that building model. We also determined that we would be doing laser scanning, both interior and exterior, to get a really good, accurate measurements of the building itself. We talked about file sharing, and we also went into a little bit of what the most important aspects of the building to maintain are, and that's what we would call preservation zoning. There are beautiful aspects of this building in both detail and materials. There's a lot of discussion around the elevator cores and the circulation patterns on first floor that that would need to be maintained ideally from a historical sense, as well as some beautiful lighting that historical lighting that is existing within the building. We started to talk about square foot needs assessments with each of the tenants, and I say started because that process carried through each of the workshops, and we continued to work with our tenant groups on square foot needs right up to the week prior to this hearing. We broke the rules of presentation here because there are handouts, so there's a little narrative that goes along with these on each of the workshops, and I will speak to the, each of the slides, but I encourage you to read up on each what happened at the workshops. Workshop 2 focused on committee rooms and hearing rooms, and a lot of discussion about security and accessibility as it pertains to these rooms. We also talked about conference rooms, meeting and support spaces. At the end of that discussion, it was determined that the group as a whole found that it would be ideal, and in fact needed, to have 10 committee rooms at the end of this project, which is what we have now. Those sizes would change. We have three different sizes that would be labeled large, medium, and small. Two large hearing rooms are needed at 260 to 300 people capacity. Four medium hearing rooms at 150 to 200 people capacity. And four small hearing rooms at 75 to 100. There is also a lot of discussion about the need for conference rooms and where those could be strategically located as they pertain to offices. Workshop 3, then, was about offices. And because we were talking about that, it was a good chance to talk about circulation and how you approach those offices, how the public interacts with not only member offices, but other departments as well. And, of course, the natural light discussion. the original design of this building had two atriums that allowed natural light to the center of the building. And in the 1980s, those were filled in, not allowing for a lot of natural light to the center of the building. And so there was a desire to reintroduce that aspect in some way, shape, or form. And what we found was there was actually efficiencies in getting natural light to offices. And we would find that you could find more members' offices on each floor if we did go down that path. We also defined what an office was, and we saw five different sizes of those offices. Those would consist of leadership offices, member offices, department head offices, staff offices with a door, and staff workstations. So that was a key factor in starting to lay out what a floor might look like as it pertains to how people work. Workshop number four was on security, life safety, and accessibility. And it's important to note that this workshop focused on those three items, but all of the workshops addressed those three items. A main factor for the need to increase the productivity in this building always went back to security, life safety, and accessibility. And I know a lot of that was touched upon on Monday, and you will see some of those factors in the design presentation after this one. Workshop number five is what we in the business call MEP, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. We've talked at length on Monday about what those deficiencies are in the building. We also talked a lot about what the sustainability goals would be for this project and the importance of meeting those goals and exceeding the baselines that were set years ago. We also talked about the tunnel. The tunnel system was discussed as a challenge and something that we want to address. It's not part of this immediate project, but it will be a challenge to meet the needs of a tunnel that still needs some more work. Workshop number six talked about telecom and broadcast. I would say that the need for hearings to be broadcast has increased in the past few years. And as such, broadcast media and their space needs have grown. There were spaces that were used for other things, like press conferences, that have now been taken over by video editing and those kinds of things that have increased in demand due to the pandemic. And so we spent a lot of time really getting a good handle on what the future needs are for broadcast. Workshop seven, another acronym that we use, FF&E, furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Not only the loose furniture in the building, but also the fixed furniture, like that is what is behind me right now. We talked about all of those needs, and the idea here was that flexibility would be key in many of the spaces when it comes to furniture. And finally, workshop number eight was our summary. And this is where, by this time, after 4 months of workshopping and talking to tenant groups and meeting both online and offline with them, we were finally getting really comfortable with our space needs. The list you see, this is in two slides that are broken up here just due to the size, so their legibility. The square footage here represents gross square footage. They include grossing factors. And what I mean by that is I will say if I needed an office of 200 square feet and Steve next to me in my department also needs an office of 200 square feet, it would be easy to say that our square footage needs are 400 square feet. But within that area, we need some space for circulation and we need walls. So we would have a gross up factor before design ever happens that we would understand that it's a little bit more than 400 square feet. That's within our department. And we take all of the departments together, and there is another grossing factor that goes on top of that in the area of 35%, so that the numbers you see here reflect percentage-wise of what the needs are for each of the tenants, This is the first slide. The second slide shows more of those tenants in a total square footage need at the bottom of 456,000 square feet. The existing building that we are sitting in today is 290,000 square feet. So future needs for full functionality of all tenant groups, there is a delta. And that means there is a need to either relocate some of the tenant groups or to build an addition onto this building.
Questions for Mr. Stallman? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just that last point that you're making, could you tell me again the square feet that we're lacking right now?
Mr. Stallman.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'll go back a slide. 456,000 square feet is the need and change. 290 is the existing building. So 166,000, if my math is correct, is the delta as the building stands today.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Berg, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Winkler and members of the committee. My name is Steve Berg. I'm an architect with BWBR. Our office is located just down the street in St. Paul. And I've been asked to share the proposed planning for the improvement and expansion for the state office building. And I just want to set the stage. Joe just described the program needs, and that's what the plans that I'm about to share reflect. So that addition you will see as a part of it. And I also just want to thank Joe for going through the process of the workshops. It was incredibly valuable for our design team and consulting partners to listen to the challenges and the needs and all of the challenges, I guess, for this building, and incorporating that into a design process. So I will take you through, and I'll just advance the slide. And we really have to go back to the core values, which Joe mentioned. These are so important. They serve as the foundation for the planning for this building from workshop one and continuing through if this project moves forward. And I don't need to spend a lot of time because Joe hit on this, but the safety and security blended with open and accessible. Really, this is a challenge that our team is excited to share with you from planning to create an inviting and safe environment for all that enter. And blending that with a functional building, something that is straightforward and logical for visitors. And lastly, the character. And Joe, I think, did a great job of describing this. But how can this building, the renovation and rework, actually be reflective of Minnesota's great heritage and values and also look to the future? So these core values are just so important for us to study. So if you want to, those who have a slide deck, I'm going to advance to page 3 and give you a little bit of orientation. This is proposed tenant floor plans for all levels. So if you can see my cursor here, starting in the lower left, this is the basement floor plan, proposed tenant floor plan, all the way up to the 6th floor level in the upper right-hand corner. And just to give you a little bit more context or familiarize with the plan itself, why don't we take a look at that basement plan in the lower left? That is the footprint of the existing state office building that everyone in this room that we are in. And the extension or the addition is shown to the north. So that will just give you some added context. Also, to the east, of course, is the Capitol and the Capitol Mall. And to the west of the existing is the state office building parking ramp. So just a little context. But before we launch into the specific tenant floor plans, really thought we would take a look at the first floor plan. This is on page 4 of your handout, and discuss some of the key planning elements of this building. And the first, and we've heard it in the workshop process, but a building that is truly accessible to all. And what I mean by that is a building that has defined accessible building entrances. You'll notice those on the west and east entrance of the addition, with adjacent accessible parking and drop-off zones, as well as adjacent committee hearing rooms on this first floor that are fully accessible and have an assisted listening system and audio amplification. So really making this a building for the people. Next would be intuitive wayfinding. This was brought up, I think, in that very first workshop, the importance of having a building that is functional and intuitive for visitors that arrive into the building for the first time or multiple times. And in fact, there were some lessons learned from the Senate building, and that there are challenges in navigating around in certain areas. So how can we improve on that for the state office building and really bridge this for the long term? And you'll see in this diagram, there's a illustration of nodes. So when you come in to this main public entrance, you're directly in line of sight with elevators and stairs that could take you through the building. But you're also, there's a central north-south circulation that links to the addition or the existing elevator core that you all are familiar with. Very important for the function of the building. And the third point was integrated safety. We've heard a lot about safety and, frankly, a lot of challenges that exist in the current state of the building. So I will keep this fairly straightforward, that these diagrams really show a simplified way to secure access points in the building and ultimately the ability to mitigate any potential threats. Really important as we're thinking about the plans for this. So next let's see, page 7, I believe, of your handout, I will walk through floor by floor with the various tenant groups proposed for the renovation and addition. Starting on the left, you'll see the basement floor plan. These are hopefully zoomed in enough so that you can see them. And I'll just highlight some of the key aspects or the key components that we're showing. Starting with the what is noted as building support. So Joe mentioned HVAC or MEP, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, are really deficient in this building today. And we need to have proper size for airflow, ventilation. So much of this building on the lower floor, central area, without access to daylight, has building support. And flanking around the perimeter, where there are windows and ability for daylight, you see facility services and sergeant-at-arms and some tenant storage space on the basement. Admittedly, these walking through these plans might be a little boring for you all because I realize you can read these labels, but I'll go through it anyway. So on the ground floor plan to the right, one of the key elements, that's where we are right now. You'll see room 10 is designated as additional building support. This was really important because it's the level of tunnel access. So to the south, you can see that's the tunnel to the Department of Transportation, and providing a clear passageway north-south to the addition and then over to the Capitol, making sure that it's very easy for people to traverse to all of the buildings on the Capitol area complex. If I go through the various tenants, I will highlight, if you can see my cursor, in the existing, in the green shade, we have two LCC suites, Legislative Coordinating Commission suites. To the southwest quadrant, you have the LBO, the Legislative Budget Office, and Sergeant-at-Arms space in the northwest quadrant of the existing. Moving to the north in the addition, there's building support for mechanical, electrical, and much needed space for House Public Information, studios, etc. We advance to page 8. We'll move up to the first floor. And I did show this in those key planning elements, but without the specific tenant groups. So I'll walk through the tenant groups right now. So starting on the existing first floor, there's another tenant space of the LCC in green in the southeast quadrant. On the southwest quadrant, you have human resources and budget and accounting. And moving to the northwest corner, legislative reference library. And the northeast corner of the existing building, the primary sergeant-at-arms space. This was located for key views to the Capitol Mall, as well as being central to many of the committee hearing rooms and the public entrance, so very strategically located. And then moving further north into the proposed addition, committee hearing rooms colored in a light blue. And on this floor, a proposed, if you recall Joe mentioning the various sizes or seating capacity, there's one large, two mediums, and one small designated here. And another tenant group in the northwest quadrant of the addition is the Secretary of State's office. Moving over to the right and looking at the second floor, we'll start within the existing footprint. This blue is tenant space for House of Representatives. This includes certainly member offices, staff, LAs, and support space such as conference rooms, really key to the function of that space. It's also in the similar footprint that you have currently. One thing to note regarding the member offices, it was really not about any increase in member office sizes, but a lot of study of how can these be more consistent. Right now you have such irregular shaped offices, and it makes it a real challenge for furniture and just a cohesive planning module throughout. So that was a prime goal for the planning that you'll see on these floors for the house space. And moving to the addition, there's a lighter blue denoted on the east. That represents the double height space of the larger committee hearing rooms. That's to aid in overall function of the space, making sure that you have adequate ability for technology integration, cameras, sight lines, as well as just the sheer capacity of those rooms. And then moving to the northwest corner of the addition is a revisor of statutes space. And you'll see when you turn to the next page, 9, the revisor's office is stacked on two levels in that northwest quadrant of the addition. So I think these are getting a little bit easier for me to describe because there's less colors. There's a lot of tenants throughout this building. So we'll go through the third floor. Again, another block of House of Representatives in blue. There's four additional committee hearing rooms, a large one and one medium and two small. And then I already mentioned the revisor's office in the northwest quadrant. We're almost there. Moving up to the fourth floor, again, the blue denoting House of Representatives tenant space, some additional volume or double height space for those committee hearing rooms that are on three. Just the larger ones, the small committee rooms, do not have that added volume. And then House Minority Research, Media, and Constituent Services, located and colored in green in the northwest quadrant of the building. And the final plan, proposed floor plans for the fifth. Again, repetitive House of Representatives in blue. There is a press conference located on the at the center of the addition, right adjacent to the elevator and vertical circulation of the building. And House Majority Research located in the northwest quadrant of the addition. And two additional committee hearing rooms that are located on the fifth floor. And last but certainly not least, the sixth floor is designated for House research and fiscal analysis in the existing footprint. And then a block of space largely in the roof of the proposed building for building support, adequate airflow, et cetera. So with that, that's a lot of information for me to run through, but I wanted to take those plans and give a little bit of an idea of what that would look like in a building form. So on your handout 11, this is a proposed exterior view looking from the northeast. We heard very early on from in the workshop process that any addition should be reflective of the existing state office building and really blend in to the Capitol area. And we hope that this achieves that. So with that, I will turn it over to you, Chair Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Berg, and thank you, Mr. Stallman, again, for your presentation. Members, obviously, this is a significant change on the Capitol complex, and it comes at a significant cost. There are just a couple of things I would like to point out about this proposal. First of all, Mr. Berg touched on it, but this building is this proposal is not primarily geared towards expanding space for members of the Minnesota House of Representatives. Offices will be the same as they are now. Now they vary in size and shape, but roughly the square footage will be the same. There will be a few more conference rooms in the current state office building. But for the most part, this is maintaining status quo in terms of individual member office access and use. We do, however, have a much more secure building through this plan by controlling public access, not shutting it off, not being all open or all closed, or having to be open some days but not other days. This can be open all the time, and the building can have controlled access to member offices through waiting areas and staging areas for members to be escorted, or if the time is such that people feel like the building can be open for people to move through, we can zone it, which is consistent with standard security practices. The addition to the building is almost entirely public space. This is a set of conference rooms, hearing rooms, and access points for the public to be involved in the legislative process. To create the amount of space in hearing rooms that is safe and accessible, we need a lot of entrances and outside space. If you compare having 200 people in this room and 200 people across the hall and look where they need to go through in that narrow hallway, and then you think about times when you've had to traverse the tunnel at the same time and move through this Capitol complex, it is, when crowded, not a safe situation. And simply having more space outside of hearing rooms creates an opportunity for safety and security and for members, of course, but also for people in the public who may find themselves in emergent situations as well. So the emphasis here is on serving public access safely. It is a dual mission that consumes a lot of space, and space costs money. And the number of choices in front of us, if we don't adopt a plan, something like this, are not very good. They require us to either continue to have a building that is not safe, or a building that is closed off from the public, either completely or partially, that's about it. We can either be open and unsafe, we can be closed and inaccessible, or we can expand and improve our building and serve those dual missions, and that's what this proposal represents. So with that, questions, I saw Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions. First, I only see one option. Were there other options that were forwarded to, I guess, yourself and your members that were then scrutinized and that this was chosen, or was this the only version that was put forward?
Representative Nash, as this design process was underway, there were, if you will, rough cuts of what could be done. But those studies narrowed down over time. And I should emphasize also the narrow timeline that we had to get this done. At this time next year, the authorization under the statute expires. And so we are in a tight timeline to try to narrow down options. We looked at other ways of doing this in terms of additions or other ways that we could expand the current space. But there was never really any consideration of simply renovate, and the Department of Administration has proposed renovations of this building as it stands today. We knew we did not have the space to do that, and so we did not spend a lot of time considering that after we went through this design process.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you. I'll frame my next couple of questions this way. So on any given Saturday, when I come home in the fall out hunting or door knocking, and sometimes I'll walk into the house and my wife will be watching like an HGTV home renovation channel, and I don't find those particularly interesting, but she and a lot of my kids do. One of the things that sticks out in the conversation, I ask her, why do you like these so much? She goes, well, Jim, you know, they come in and they're renovating normal people's homes, and they're giving them options, and they're working on budgets, and they're trying to find the thing that works the best use case for the best possible price. And I think that those shows perhaps have high ratings because they resonate with real everyday people, because they're renovating a home and they're working on a tight budget and they're doing the very best they can with the least amount of money. And I ran the numbers, Mr. Chair, and it's $498,763,904 plus in lines 9 through 16 of your resolution. It kind of leaves some open-ended spending for things and stuff. That's my term, not here. But things and stuff that always add up, and it's going to likely nudge north of $500 million. And I'm just curious as to, you know, why didn't we maybe work through that more diligently? Because we, the minority party, and I don't know when your members got this, but we, the minority party, got this at 7:08 this morning. I'm just kind of curious as to why we didn't have a couple of plans like they do on all the dramatic television scenes, and why are we doing that, and why weren't we given the opportunity to see some of the things that we're going to be asked to vote on here in a few minutes, well in advance of that, so we could do some of our own research?
Representative Nash, I guess I would, I have here the bonding proposals from the Department of Administration. We have had ample opportunity for many years to look at the needs of this building and act on them, and nothing has happened. The design of the statute that we created in 2021 allowed us to move forward and bring a plan for resolution, because that has lagged for so many years through inaction and inattention. I certainly would be very happy to present a much cheaper plan if a much cheaper plan would actually serve the needs of the public in this building, but it won't. We could tear this building down and build new. Potentially that could save money, but the statute, first of all, didn't allow that, and second of all, I don't think that's in keeping with our tradition here on the Capitol complex. We could remove tenants, we could kick out the LCC, or we could kick out the revisor, but they would have to go somewhere, and that would cost money too. We could remove hearing rooms or shrink hearing rooms, but I think we saw from Mr. Meyerson's presentation on Monday that there is increased public appetite to be present, and I don't think rationing public involvement in the legislative process is a good idea. We could do, you know, just the building we have now and hope for the best, but again, that would lead to a significant reduction in public access to the legislative process. And so, you know, there's another just challenge in figuring out how to do all this, knowing that politically nobody's had the will to take action over time. So considering all the options, considering ways that we could reduce costs, wouldn't actually reduce costs. It would just push costs other places, which of course is a great legislative tradition, but doesn't actually solve problems. We brought forward a plan that will actually solve the problem. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll finish after this. I certainly understand that this building needs renovation, and I freely admit that. But again, on the presentation, the core values, secure and safe, I agree with. Open and accessible, absolutely. Functionality, very high on my scale. But it's that character piece that I'm wondering is, did we drive the price up in the character? And that's probably to be litigated at a later date over years of talking about it. But I just think it, at a time when Minnesotans are, one, quite impressed with the projected budget surplus, and yet their own dearth of their personal surplus, we are now going to put forward a proposal for likely over $500 million to build a,
I don't want to call it a cathedral to government because that's across the street in the Capitol, but this is certainly maybe, Representative Olson called it a basilica towards government. I would urge less spending on this one. It's impressive pictures and they're quite nice, but over a half a billion dollars seems exorbitant. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. One other thing I'd like to point out is of this total figure that you cited, over $115 million are contingencies and inflation. So the concept of approving something to see costs rise is exactly what we're trying to avoid. We are trying to do this the responsible way, show what the plan is, show the potential costs, project inflation, and we have an opportunity to control those costs in the future and actually keep the budget under control or potentially come in under budget, depending on what those projections show. Well, that's going to be up to the project team that goes forward. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't know who to address this question to because Republicans were effectively shut out of this very early in the process. But when I look at remodeling my house or my roof needs to be fixed, I don't just go out and say, well, the roof needs to get fixed. We're going to completely redo every single thing. We're going to get it all done. We're going to spend $498,763,904 plus buying a bunch of really expensive desks and chairs. So I know that this has to be an answer somewhere. On Monday, Mr. Given came and he told us all the problems that were with this building, everything that was in a fair condition or in a poor condition. So I imagine there is a number, in fact, that would be the total cost to bring the fair and the poors back to a good or an excellent status. So is there an actual number that we investigated that just said, hey, forget about building a new addition, forget about all the nice, I mean, it looks like there's gold plating on the wall here on the outside. I don't know what that is, but it looks very beautiful. Instead of that, what is the very bottom dollar? Because our job, and Mr. Chair, you said it yourself, responsible spending is exactly the word you used. Can you prove to me that this is the responsible spending that we need? What is the number to bring this building up to a good status once more? Because there, as Representative Nash said, there's no question. We were talking about this on Monday and a light was flickering in the conference room that we were in. So there's no question that work needs to be done on this. But the question is, what is that bare minimum bottom dollar? How much money to get this to a good status? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson, I can address that. And Mr. Baudry, I was going to make sure I got it right. Mr. Baudry can distribute a summary of Department of Administration bonding requests. So in 2020, there was a request from the Department of Administration for bonds that would cost $255 million just to take care of this building as it stands. So that would take care of the infrastructure needs of the building. That would do virtually nothing for the safety and security needs of the building. So we would still have overcrowded hearing rooms. We would still have, would do nothing for ADA accessibility because we would continue to have ramps and that are not ADA compliant. We would continue to have a lack of access from the exterior of the building. So just to take care of a sick patient and make it well would be $255 million in 2020 dollars. And there's been significant construction inflation even since that time. And so in order to take care of the safety and security element of this, and to keep the building open and accessible, we are going north of a 2020 figure of $255 million. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question. I know that when we passed this back a couple years ago, we were talking about letting bonds. Are we paying, are we going to use that same similar process in order to pay for this, or are we going to be paying cash for this project?
Representative Olson, the way I would summarize it is we will be paying for this building for 20 years in order to get a 50-year building. This is paid for through bonds. So the $498 million number that Representative Nash cited is paid out over time. It is not like we're taking $500 million out of this current budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A couple of questions. About the design itself, are there more, and I don't know who the right person is, maybe the architect or the representative from the architect, are there more detailed design plans than what we're looking at? These look like kind of conceptual, like this area will be used for this purpose, but doesn't get more specific on where walls will be and how big offices will be and that sort of thing. Are there more specific design plans that have been looked at?
Representative Dowd, I can ask Mr. Berg to answer, but of course, this is built on assumptions of office size and the amount of square footage and chairs you need in conference rooms and so forth. So in order to create a summary, there have to be foundational documents that support that. Representative Mr. Berg, any?
Mr. Chair and members, I think your answer is correct. There is further detail to provide estimates that we can feel all are comfortable with. But this serves the way to share and present this overall.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to call you Mr. Leader. Sorry, I haven't sat in a committee in 10 years.
Feel free. I only have like another hour of this. So.
You and I both. So, and I haven't sat in a committee for 10 years, really. Nonetheless, can we see those more detailed designs and plans? Is there some place we can review those?
So, Representative Dowd, the next agenda item is to review a resolution which is broken down by square footage. And well, it's not broken down by square footage, just cost representing square footage. And so this design concept and the dollar figures associated with it and the square footage by tenant group will be subject to the committee's approval. If we go forward with that approval, I think we can dive more into the details of what supports these approval documents.
Thank you, Mr. Leader.
Representative Dowd, anything further?
Yeah, Mr. Leader and Mr. Berg, can you point out where the leadership offices are and what the concept is there? Has that changed? Where would those be in these plans?
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair and members, right now if you turn to page 9 of your handout. So there's space accommodations for leadership on the fourth floor as well as the fifth floor. So you can see the house space is expanded slightly to the north, and that would be to accommodate the leadership space, fourth and fifth floor. So on your handout 9 and 10.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Mr. Berg, I assume that's minority offices in that kind of bump out space in the new area on the fourth floor, and majority spaces on the fifth floor. Is that correct?
Well, Representative Dowd, let me just address that. That, I think, is the current concept. The point is the space needed to accommodate member offices and leadership offices is distributed on the fourth and fifth floor, but final decisions are going to be subject to a lot more discussion.
Okay. Thank you. And then the one thing in this process, and I was involved a little bit at the beginning with just kind of the questions about, how does the current space work? And just from my own perspective, I think we all know that this building needs some work and is getting a little bit long in the tooth. And it was kind of shocking to hear some of those stories about somebody being impaled by a sliver off of one of our wall or half walls that exists in one of the other hearing rooms. And certainly we don't want those things, somebody falling down the steps and falling through a window out in the parking ramp. While those things are shocking, they're not necessarily due to disrepair of a building, right? Those are kind of accidental things. And the one thing that I brought up in that process was we have a deficiency in our tunnel from this building into the Capitol. I really wish that would have been fixed when we did the Capitol building. But I mean, I have literally myself helped push motorized wheelchairs up that ramp getting into the Capitol. It's a very narrow space. I don't see anything in these documents about that being addressed. Can somebody talk about whether that's being addressed in this process?
Representative Dowd, I'm happy to address that. We tried. We got an opinion from bound lawyers and others at MMB that the tunnel was outside of the scope of the authority in this project. It is my understanding that the Department of Administration has a plan for improving the tunnel, and so this proposed design is intended to link up with a repair of that tunnel to allow ADA access.
Okay. I appreciate that, and maybe if somebody from admin could link up with me at some point about that. It just has been a concern of mine for a while, and I think it was an oversight of all of ours probably not to include that in when we did the Capitol building, and I assume that budgets were probably a constraint at that time as well. But it is that tunnel is a concern, so I think it is something we should address. Just general comments from myself, and I appreciate your comment. This is my last meeting as leader of my caucus as well, and thank you everybody for allowing me the opportunity for that service. The process here, while I know that this building needs some work, and the process here is something, and I appreciate your comments, Mr. Leader, about having the courage to take a tough vote to do this, and while there are always political ramifications, I think we all know what happened when the Senate office building was built a few years ago for the tune of about $90 million. It became political, it became controversial, as these things often do. I will say that I kind of knew and was expecting, I think the number we all talked about at the end of session when this thing was appropriated or approved, not appropriated, but approved, kind of an open and standing appropriation for the paying for this, the debt service on this building at the end of session. I think the number that was talked about was potentially like $330 million. I'm just seeing this stuff this morning. I think I would ask all of us, and as somebody who's done this for a while, maybe it's time we take a step back and take a deep breath on this one. We're talking about $500 million. And by the way, if you read the resolution, the $500 million doesn't include the whole project. It looks to me like it doesn't include the contingencies of moving out and the swing space and the furniture and all of that. It looks like that's probably covered in the last paragraph of the resolution that would go over and above the almost $500 million. And to put that into perspective, the Viking Stadium was twice this. This is almost, and I would guess with swing space and paying for contingencies and, or not contingencies, but furniture and all the other stuff, my guess is this project will run twice, two times, double what we paid for the state capitol. And we're still not addressing very basic things like the access to the state capitol from this building via the tunnel, which I think gives our public, handicap access to the state capitol and an ability to park, over here in the MnDOT building and have handicap access to the capitol. I know they can get that now through the Senate office building as well, but if they want to come into this building, it's very often you got to park over here on this side of the street. I would suggest we take a deep breath here and go through a little more transparent process. This is, and no offense to anybody that spent a lot of time planning and working on this. We are all elected officials who have election certificates, who are stewards of the tax dollars. Spending this kind of money on a building for ourselves is something I would describe as egregious. $500 million. I mean, I thought if I saw a number close to 300, I'd kind of be shocked. And I figured that the 300 number at the end of session that was bantered around was kind of a, hey, worst case scenario. We're almost double that. And knowing what we spent and invested into the Capitol building when we did that restoration, I mean, we spent $60 or $65 million just on the stonework, getting marble from the same quarry in Georgia that the original marble on the Capitol came from. And we had people imported from Europe to do the hand carving of the marble on that building. And that will cost us half of what this is gonna cost. I think this is a point at which we as elected officials, and I'm not trying to be political here, this is literally just somebody who spent some time here as a leader, both in the minority and the majority, saying maybe we just ought to take a deep breath and take a look at this and do a little more transparent process. I mean, we're talking about finalizing an approval for a concept and passing a resolution on a meeting that, was scheduled less than a week ago and rescheduled less than 24 hours ago on a day that's stormy. And now the staff, I think, is not even in the building because we have inclement weather. this is not the way we should conduct business. This isn't the kind of transparency that I think this sort of project requires when we're spending money out of the taxpayers' purse. And I just think we have failed Minnesotans if we think that this process and the egregiousness of the size of this project is an acceptable way to conduct business here at the legislature. So I think we all ought to take a deep breath and say, you know what, if this is all that important and the authorization in that legislation from the end of the last session runs out on December 23rd, I think, of 2023 or something like that, or maybe it's December 31st of 2023, it can also be renewed. And it can be renewed once the public has been included in a process and legislators from both sides of the aisle have been included in a process. And we've actually really talked about, are there other options? I see things in these plans, then I think to myself, this isn't the sort of thing we should be doing with taxpayer dollars to provide ourselves with what I would say is adequate office space and adequate and safe committee hearing rooms and ways for the public to access us. The legislature has been basically shut down, and we've had the public shut out for almost 2 years or maybe almost 3 years now. And we've just now gotten back to public hearings like this where the public can participate. I think, that whole process is something that should also make us take pause to what it is that we do and why we do it. And the why we do it is the most important part. And making sure that we provide the public with the transparency and the access to this process, to think that we are going to spend half as much as we spent on U.S. Bank Stadium, actually probably more than we spent on U.S. Bank Stadium, the public share of that, but half as much as it cost to build that building, and almost twice as much as what it cost to just remodel the Capitol and restore the Capitol after 115 years. I will just say, and I was expecting a big number. This number is far beyond what I was expecting, and it's actually shocking. So, Mr. Leader, I would recommend that we, as members and stewards of taxpayer dollars, take a deep breath right now and set out a little more transparent process and push this off. Not vote on this today, but let's pause on this and come back. We have new members who are going to be involved in this process. They're going to be taken over here right at the beginning of January, and I think it's a good opportunity to just get some fresh eyes on this. Let's look at some more detailed plans, and let's look at some other options as well, because this is something that should, and I have a feeling when the public sees this number and sees the renderings of this building, jaws are going to drop. This is for somebody who's expecting a lot, this is shocking. So I would suggest that we all take a deep breath and push this off a little bit for a more transparent process. Thank you, Mr. Leader.
Representative Dowd, I think we've been pausing for a long time. 2012 number from the Department of Administration just to take care of the building was $25 million. By 2014, further decay raises it to $94 million. By 2016, we are up to 110. By 2018, we are up to 259. In 2020, it's the same number. Delay does not actually make anything cheaper. And none of that includes addressing safety, and the numbers that you're using for comparison don't consider inflation, which if you add up inflation plus safety, I think we've talked a lot about that in the last year, and it should be the same recognition should be applied to this building. I do have other members on the list, so I'm going to move on, and we'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and mine are probably more general comments about this process. I really found yesterday was really interesting to, I've been lucky enough to be in this process for a while now and approaching my 10th term here with. And it's really quite an honor. And I don't really care that much about my space, my office. It's nice to have an office. But the people that are around us are really what this is about, and keeping them safe and having and just making sure that this place works for the public. And for me, I was actually involved in that flood that you had that nice picture, Representative Dowd, you were there, that I was on the floor, that was deeply impacted. And it was made clear to us at that time that it's likely to happen again, that same sort of thing. And I don't know the number there, but it was a multi-million dollar, and someone here probably has that number. It $6 million just for a pipe leak. I mean, it's shocking how much these the costs are, and it was a real impact. And there was a member next to my office, Karen Clark, who had a lot of documents and arguably historical documents, you know, at least to her, and they were very impacted, and but that leads me to the. You know, the safety of this building. I mean, clearly there was mold. That's why they were moving things. And we saw yesterday there was pictures with the, you know, the offices and of our staff that had mold in them. So that goes on. And, you know, a couple of years ago I had a challenge physically myself, and we talked about the accessibility of this building and this process. And I had firsthand some experience just coming down that little hill there. Doesn't look like much, but you get in a wheelchair and you come down that little hill, it's a real thing, like, hang on. And I'm glad, Representative Dowd, you mentioned the tunnel, because that also is a real thing, like trying to get up. I remember my wife was helping me, and we were like, I had one good arm, so I was like pulling on the one side and she's pushing, but it was all we could do to get up. And but there's challenges, and we need to be aware of that, and that's what this is. This is in dealing with that. The Senate building, I mean, I remember how the Senate was. Some of those offices up in the third floor in the Capitol. I mean, there's no way a handicapped person could get in to see a member or get to a bathroom or do any of these things. So having access is really a real thing, and I think I was really touched by the man's testimony yesterday, because he said he was, you know, had challenges, but you necessarily couldn't see him. And I think that's, you know, and then he also had data about how it's going to impact everybody. So I think there's more people that have physically challenges or have them. We notice more and more member scooters every year. Like that, when I first started, there was never a scooter. I don't remember that. I don't know why there had to be physically challenged members. But I don't remember any scooters or any of that in the hallway. But the safety of the building is a real thing, and I'm glad we're dealing with it. And I've been lucky enough to serve on capital investment, and it's shocking the costs that have gone up on these buildings over and over and over. So it's hard to compare, you know, apples to apples, you know, without realizing how the prices have changed. I happen to have a nice, well, I've got a cabin, a nice cabin, but anyways, you know, we drive used cars, and I don't update my cars because I have a little bit of sticker shock of, you know, versus my 2010 Prius to a new Prius or a new car, Tesla, if you're whatever you're, or Porsche. So, but the safety is number one. I think we got to look at the public, making sure they have access to us and the process. And we need to really look at our staff and be aware of the quality of team that we have. I listen to retirement speeches, and everybody talks about how amazing our staff is, and they are. And we're just so blessed as a state to have our partisan and nonpartisan staff and just the talent. But we need to make sure they're safe, and it's going to cost some money to make sure that they're not working in a moldy or a dangerous environment. So anyways, those are my more comments. And I wish it didn't cost as much too. I mean, it's a little bit of, I mean, yeah, we could do it across, you know, maybe renovate Sears across the hall or street. But does that make sense for Minnesota? I don't think so. It's you can always put this off and keep looking for more information, but I guarantee you the prices aren't going to go down. And so thank you for your leadership on this, and I think it's a good proposal. I really enjoyed today's presentation, and yesterday I was really struck by the safety concerns of the process and the building. So thank you.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Winkler. Just a really quick question here. There was a comment made that Republicans were shut out of this process early on, and I guess I remembered being a part of the process. And if maybe the testifier could just remind us when the project started and when the members were brought in. I think there was a list of bipartisan members that were part of the sessions. And so if you could just remind me when this project started and when both parties were brought in to sort of provide some input on this.
Mr. Stallman.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the workshop process started on June 1st of 2022. That went 4 months to the end of September. We did meet with that six-member panel twice during that time, and they were all-inclusive reviews of the workshops to date. So one towards the middle of that process and one towards the end. I think that answers your question.
Representative Herr.
Thank you for that response, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to remind everyone that I think, you know, committee hearings come up when they do, when we have the work, but that transparency and involvement of both parties, I think, happened very early on, and there was a lot of contribution from both the Republicans and the Democrat, and so I really appreciate the process that allowed for voices from both parties in this process. I did just have one other question, and it might have been, should have been maybe for the testifiers yesterday, but I just had a quick question around parking. That is the parking ramp that we envisioned, will that did also include public parking, not just for members and staff, is that correct?
Representative Herr, there is no change to the parking structure.
Okay.
There is a proposed change to from the access of this building to the parking structure, so that there's a causeway at the first level and at the ground level that, like we have now, because we have no elevators.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the reason why I asked that question is that just as with the tunnel that wasn't taken into consideration, I would have loved to see maybe some public parking closer. I have a lot of veterans that come to see me, and they don't come because there is no accessible parking that and most of our veterans are older or disabled, and it makes it very difficult for them to come visit us and come talk to us in our spaces here. I also know that most of my visitors oftentimes are from our senior community, even if it's just for regular issues, and it makes it very difficult for them to come in to see us, and we're supposed to be accessible to them. It would have been wonderful, though this is a big price. I think that in order to really accommodate the community and those who need access to us, we probably should have maybe taken that into consideration so that we would have closer parking for those who may need it. So I just wanted to make that comment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Herr, I think your comments are spot on. There are a couple of factors. Number one, parking is part of a broader capital complex set of issues. It's, it's a garage attached to this building is for members and staff, but we have other public parking around the campus. And so I think that's a separate conversation that involves the whole complex, not just the state office building. But in proposing this design, as Mr. Berg pointed out, there is an accessible entry point on the west side of the building, which is designed as a drop-off point, so that people actually have the space to come in and do a ADA accessible drop-off. So you can't park right there, but at least there is a much better access directly to the building than anything we have right now. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Leader Winkler. I just want to first just open up by saying thank you. Thank you for taking the leadership to this project. It's a long time coming, and I would think pretty much overdue. I was just looking through the cost going back to 2012, too, and if we could just look at from 2012 to 2020, the cost and what that looks like, now is the time to really move forward to create a space here where public access and accessibility is available, but we also are looking at security and safety. So in regards to the public access and security and safety, when I was listening to the presentation of the proposed floor plan, and I looked at the press conference on the fifth floor, I'm able to see the safety part about with that, because often the public comes in for those press conference and they have to have access to many different floors. This is the top floor compared to now being on the main floor. So can you talk a little bit more about that process and proposal of having a press conference on the fifth floor?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Again, I want to just state that those are proposed plans for the location. The press conference was located directly from the elevator core, so convenience for public access was taken into account. And although we aren't getting into the details about the security measures, there are control points that I mentioned that allow and make certain that their safety is kept in that space.
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you've ever been here when there's been a press conference and the number of people who show up, and really to have the public moving through the SOB building, I just can't visualize that right now, and having that process and that access point up to the fifth floor. And I do hear that it's a proposal, it's proposed, but I would keep it basically at the base level. That would be my suggestion, but I think you guys are the expert. There's so much more conversation that needs to happen or will happen. Mr. Chair, Leader Winkler, I am so happy to see us moving forward on this proposed request, and that we can really do better and be better in the 21st century and really create an access for the public here in the SOB.
Representative Moran, I think your point about the public using the press conference room is a good one and something that should be considered in how people move through the building and where that press conference room is. It's one of the challenges with the Capitol restoration project, that press conference room is small and it's out of the way. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily great for public members or members of the public to show up and do it. I'm going to come back to Olson and Representatives Olson and Doubt. I want to get everybody a chance, and we are about 12 minutes away from concluding. So Representative Wolgamon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to expand on a comparison that's been made from members from the minority and that I've seen cited in the media, comparing the proposal before us and its cost with the cost of the capital renovation that was done. Mr. Chair, can you please assess the validity of that comparison? What are we doing with this project that is different in the scope that was done with the capital restoration? Why might that lead to a difference in the amount of cost?
Representative Wolgamon, first of all, that was 10 years ago, so there's been significant inflation. Second, in the capital restoration process, yes, a lot of artists were hired, a lot of stonework was done, but the end result was the removal of all but one committee hearing room for the House of Representatives in the Capitol building. So very little public business is done in the Capitol, and there are big open spaces, ceremonial, beautiful, a monument to the Civil War veterans and to Minnesota's history, but very little functional working space is left in the Capitol. The state office building, on the other hand, is a rabbit warren of working space. It is much more expensive and much more involved to renovate dense office space like we have in the state office building in a historic building. So that on its own is why these buildings are comparable. But the space needs of public access has been entirely ignored on the Capitol complex for committee hearing rooms. Through the Capitol restoration process, we removed public business from the Capitol, or working business of the committees of the legislature from the Capitol. And we have essentially just left a decaying building with inadequate space needs to try to fill in the gap. And so we are expanding because we need room to accommodate the public and to accommodate the legislative process so that people from wherever, whatever part of the state they may be in, can participate. It's also important to note we need expanded space for public broadcasting and technology so that people can participate in a hybrid manner, so people can appear and testify in committee hearings, and those committee hearings are broadcast, and people can participate in a live, real-time format. All that requires more space. It requires more attention to detail of how rooms are designed, and none of that is included in the current state office building. So it's not really a comparison. We renovated the Acropolis when we renovated the state capitol building. It's a beautiful monument to many things in Minnesota, but it is not a functional working building for the most part, and a state office building is. Representative Wolgamon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just like to reiterate that point that this is not just some renovation or facelift. This is improving the infrastructure of this existing building, and it's also an expansion, not for the members of the House, but for the members of the public. We are the people's house. The people of Minnesota deserve to have safe access to this legislative process, and that's what the expansion of this building is going to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make this really quick. In this resolution, online between lines 9 and 16, it says two times, including but not limited to, in discussion with the ancillary expenditures. And so the definition of ancillary, for anyone who doesn't know, it's the necessary support to the primary activities or operations of an organization. So when we're talking to our engineers over here, we're talking about how natural light improves people's work abilities by 25% or something like that, which is why they wanted to include natural lighting in the proposal. One could argue that the sound of flowing water makes me more relaxed and thus I can work better. Someone would say that music in the air could make me work better. And so that ancillary spending, necessary support to primary activities, could include things like nice, beautiful fountains, could talk about pianos. You could make an argument for nearly anything when you're saying two times, including but not limited to. Okay, so my concern here is, where are the guardrails for the taxpayers? How are we going to assure that we're not going to see grand pianos, which we have seen grand pianos, how we're not going to see marble fountains, how we're not going to see gold plating all over the place? Where are the guardrails to the taxpayers? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson, you won't find a fountain or a chocolate fondue fountain or a grand piano next to a reflecting pool on top of a chocolate river flowing through the building. This is not extravagance. This is safety, accessibility, and function for the members of the House. And if you want the sound of flowing water to inspire you to work harder, I'd suggest we do nothing in this building, and you'll hear plenty of it. Representative Dowd.
Thank you.
And to your point about the resolution, we're going to give time for Mr. McCormick to discuss it, so I want to just keep these general conversations brief. We'll go to the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Leader and members. The answer earlier, I believe, was that there are additional drawings that show some more detail. My hope is that those are public documents and that the press will have access to those documents, and my hope is that the press will request those documents. If not, I will request them and give them to you because I think there needs to be more transparency in this process. To your point, Representative Wolgamott, about the comparison with this, with the Capitol, if you don't like that comparison, we can certainly – we have a much better comparison that we can make, which is that we built a Senate office building which at the time was considered egregious. It was $90 million. It is something that didn't just include an office building, but also included a complete underground heated parking garage for all of the senators. And that structure cost $90 million. Now, if you just did some easy math and said, I don't know how much you would deduct because we're not touching the parking here. Our parking's not involved in this process. But let's just use $90 million as a very general example. $90 million, we have twice as many members, double that. You get $180 million. What's inflation? We're literally talking about more than double of that number, more than four times what was spent on the Senate office building. And we're not touching parking. You know, I appreciate the comments. I can answer why the press conference room is on that floor, because if you didn't catch on to my question earlier about where the leadership offices were, the leadership offices for the speaker will be on the fifth floor in that area that bumps out into the new building. And if you notice, there's also to talk about whether we're doing fountains or anything, it appears from the plans like there's an outdoor patio space attached to that. Yeah, we may not be doing fountains. We're doing two additional loggias in this plan. There are two of them in this building. Loggias, just like we have over on the Capitol. There's one on this side and one on the east side and the west side. That's not including the outdoor patio up on the roof outside of the speaker's suite. So I'm not seeing the detailed plans of this. I would really like to see them, and I think all of you in the majority should also see them before your leadership walks you off the plank on this vote. Because I can look at these plans pretty clearly and see what's happening, and I would call them egregious. Okay, we're talking about a half a billion dollars to build a building here, and I think we need to ask ourselves whether that serves the public or whether it serves ourselves. You know, more than four times what we spent on a Senate office building just a few years ago is far more than inflation. Inflation hasn't gone up
100% in the last 7 years or whatever it's been since we completed that building. I appreciate the work you've done, Mr. Leader. I want to tell you, since this is probably our last meeting together, and both as leaders, it's been an honor to serve with you and to work with you. I do appreciate the work you've done on this. I will say I think it is time that we take a pause, but on a personal note, I do appreciate the work that we've done together, and I wish you well in your future beyond this place. And thank you for digging in and doing this work, even though I don't agree with it today.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. I think we should move to Mr. McCormick describing the resolution. I would say that included in the resolution is a detailed breakdown of all the square footage for all the tenant groups, which is more than just the House of Representatives. It includes all of the work that is done by the legislature. So we are carrying the load for many others, and Representative Dowd, I believe that was your suggestion that we keep them in this building. So it takes up a lot of space. Mr. McCormick, could you please describe the resolution that's in the packet?
Mr. Chair, members, Patrick McCormick from House Research. There are two documents we're working off of. The first is the resolution 2022-R30, and the second is the one-page MOCA outline of the program plan for the SOB. Looking at the 2022-R30, we have on page one and page two through line 19, a series of whereas statements outlining the elements that were discussed at the Monday hearing that require a state office building improvement and expansion plan, including, for example, on page one, line nine, mentions of the public and throughout meet the public needs. On line 12 through 16, measure a mention of other entities involved, concerns with security. You'll see the whereases list all of these out in a summary fashion. Turning to page two, lines 20 through 22 outline the statutory duties that we are meeting today. We are here to approve program plans and cost estimates. And on line 26 of page two, we internally reference this separate document with MOCA at the top corner, which further outlines the program plans we're approving today. On page three and the top half of page four, we have specific cost estimates for elements of the plan, breaking them out by the various tenants in the state office building. Finally, on page four, lines 9 through 16, we have approval of ancillary expenditures, including costs of relocation, temporary officing, rent loss on tenants in the SOB, and furnishing and exterior facilities and grounds.
Chair moves adoption of the 2022-R30O resolution. Discussion to the motion. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this will go back to my initial comment and picking up on what Representative Olson had asked. Lines 9 through 16 are indeed open-ended, and I'm wondering if either the architects and managers or somebody could provide a not-to-exceed number, because I think a little restraint on this amount of largesse might be a good thing, to say that this should not exceed X number of dollars. I just think that that's, one, a very good question, but two, probably not a bad plan. You would know better, because I'm sure you've heard some of these preliminary numbers, as I call them, things and stuff, but I'm sure you've heard that. Perhaps many of your members have heard that as well. I'm just curious, can we put some guardrails around that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash, the reason those numbers are not specified is because that we don't have specific plans for how the legislature would operate if the state office building is shut down. For example, it could be a return to virtual committees and limited access to legislators working in swing space. It could be a full workup of temporary state office building kind of space. That's unknown. The Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board has to review any kind of work related to grounds. That is unknown. There is money in the proposed budget for furniture, but what is not known is how much of our existing furniture can be reused. For example, these committee chairs are new. There's no reason why they cannot be incorporated into the committee room design going forward. But that detailed level of planning is not complete for those items. So the answer to your question is no, we can't put a not to exceed number on there because it would be just throwing a dartboard or a dart at a dartboard at this point in time. But as this project proceeds, if it proceeds, that will be subject to public scrutiny and it'll be subject to reporting, and there will be every incentive to try to keep those costs in line. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess question of you, since you've seen this, what was there a discussion of it should cost us X number, or was it really just a, hey, we don't know, so we should leave ourselves an endless bag of cash to be able to do these things?
Representative Nash, the cost of swing space, for example, depends on how the House decides to operate. And that will be a choice for the next set of legislators here. So it's, I think, difficult to say what that looks like. It's just entirely speculative. Any further discussion to the chair's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the 2022-R30O resolution is adopted. Members, I would ask that if you stick around, if you can. We are preparing meeting minutes, and it is our committee legislative assistant's last day working for the Minnesota House of Representatives. He's going to go on to be the Senate Majority Leader's L.A. He is trying to prepare a set of minutes. If you could just look at your emails, they'll be coming out in a second, and respond back with approved, we can complete these minute meeting books. And Representative Hurd, did you want to recognize your legislative assistant in some way?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did just want to say I brought some treats in today for anybody who wants to join us to celebrate Abdi Hamid's last day with us. He has been in one of the best LAs I've ever had, and I am sad to see him go, even though I sent a glowing comment to Senator Dietzick, or Majority Leader Dietzick, to let her know he would be a great addition to her team. But I am sad to see him go, and I want to acknowledge this, just the amazing work he's done in the short time he's been here with us. And, best wishes for the future, and come have some orange juice and some treats with us on the fourth floor later, after this, after you approve your notes.
Thank you, Representative Herr. There is no further business before the Rules Committee today. I appreciate your attendance. This is obviously extraordinary timing at the end of the month of December, right before the Christmas holiday. But your dedication and service in the last 2 years, and for some of you for the last 4 years, is something I deeply appreciate. And we have been through a lot of ups and downs in those 4 years in this House, and we have managed to keep it together. And we're going to not just keep it together with baling wire and toothpicks going forward, we're actually going to do it right. And I appreciate your service. We are adjourned.